Rabbi Yehoshua Josh Fass is co-founder of Nefesh B'Nefesh. We're actually broadcasting from our, what is now temporary studio in Nefesh B'Nefesh headquarters, in advance of what will eventually be, please God, our permanent studio in Nefesh B'Nefesh headquarters. And I welcome you and thank you, and welcome back to JM and the AM.
Thank you so much. It is so good to see you.
I appreciate that. I think you and I have had a desire to see each other since this war started. Not that we don't the entire year, but I'm saying emotions really started to get pretty serious for people who are concerned about their brethren in different parts of the world. So we were very concerned about you and all of our friends here. And I know that you took a great interest in how we were reacting to what's happening here in this country. So it's a good feeling. It's a shame it has to evolve during this type of circumstance. Rabbi Fass.
Yes.
Please understand how I am saying this, because I, God forbid, do not want to ever be accused of publicly degrading the Jewish people. The last time you and I were in this room together, you were showing me wartime photographs. A war that was happening right outside the door to this building. In fact, you were describing to me how that war, and again, excuse me for using that term, not to be disrespectful to anything happening now, you were describing to me how that war had come literally to the steps of Nefesh B'Nefesh and many other areas of Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, name your intersection, name your city. There was, again, you might question the usage of this term, but there was a war going on. And here we are now today, just 2 months later, and we are again, unfortunately, sharing wartime photographs. The most recent, as you showed me, of one of the hostages, thank God, who had just recently been released by the enemy, and we pray that the hundreds of others are released just like she was. Life's very different than it was 2 months ago. But we were together during a very difficult time looking at photos in this room. And we now find each other in another difficult time, but very, very different this time around.
I wouldn't compare the two events at all. I wouldn't use the same terminology in any way. I think we have to be extremely, extremely sensitive. The Jewish people have not experienced something like this in the last 77 years, 78 years. I think the dysfunctionality of what happened a few months ago and the discontent and disharmony was reached a peak. And it's just heart-wrenching to see that it takes this to unify us. But we're unified. I don't think we're comforting one another, because I don't think there's any level of comfort that one can give to another. But, I mean, you just walk around the streets and you'll spend it today and tomorrow, and just everyone has the same face. Everyone is connected to this viscerally. Everyone has, either they went through it or they have a friend or a relative who is in the South, or everyone has a child or brother or father or daughter who's fighting in the armed service, in the IDF. So everyone's feeling that pain and concern. And I think that itself is unifying us, because we're all experiencing something as one. And it's prompted us to really show our true colors. And 99% of the true colors that we show are just beautiful. It's really beautiful. I think at these times, people's true personalities or national personality comes to the surface, and it's just stunning. It's just stunning to see.
And now I have to explain and clarify so people understand the drama with which I spoke.
It's okay.
Well, no, this is not to clarify because I'm afraid of being criticized. I want to clarify so people understand what I'm talking about. There may be many who don't remember what happened 2 months ago when the demonstrations and the protests about judicial reform did get to, you know, the streets right in front of us, and some of them, unfortunately, really serious encounters that required police intervention, as we know. And of course, you're right. I'm not in any way comparing the events, but there was a tension between us as brothers throughout this country. When 60 Minutes, I may have mentioned half of what I'm about to say to you today, you know, with you already on the air, but I have the need to. You're my wartime therapist. When 60 Minutes on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, as we are, you know, as we're davening Mincha Maariv and getting ready for the holiday to end, and they're airing this piece about 10,000 people in the Israeli army or Israeli reserves who are officially registered as reservists who are going ahead and proclaiming that they are not going to serve in the Israeli reserves, right? They're signing a document or making an agreement or whatever the case may be. Now, those people, you know, did not realize that if, God forbid, a real war did erupt, their inclination would be to defend the state of Israel. And we know that the volunteer rate in the army, you know, is off the charts. And every one of those people who said they're never going to serve in the reserves, of course, is now serving. We get all that. But it was a different time. And you're right. It took a jarring and incredibly horrific episode, collective episode. It's an episode that's made up of so many episodes. Today we're in this hotel, in the Shalom Hotel, speaking to representatives of a town, of a yeshuv, that in the end are not on the list of casualties. Yeah. Thank God, because of God knows how many miracles. They had no casualties in that one yeshuv. But the stories that we're hearing of bravery, of courageousness, of miracles from above, of coincidences that took place, of somebody who's called to service and because they decided that they're going to wait 10 minutes in Davin Musaf with a minion before they go into reserves, they were delayed long enough to not meet up with the enemy. I mean, you know, anyway. So it's a completely different environment. But boy, as you said, people here are just... they're up for the challenge. I think everybody here is up for the challenge. I think they feel that they have a role. Everybody here feels they have a role in it. We've been discussing that all day here so far. We know what is the role of each individual and how they're handling it.
I think, just to add another element, I think that this has been so jarring and so historic in a level for the Jewish people and for our nation that I think history is going to be written in a new chapter from this point on. Israel's going to look different. Our nation's going to look different. Every aspect, every element, I think, is going to pivot, in a sense, making the last few months just so far in our memories.
A blip.
Mamash.
Someone said to me today, someone who has an opinion worth listening to when it comes to these things, said to me that in every facet of life in Israel, religious, political, entertainment, media, everything is going to be completely different from, you know, going forward from this point, which is exactly the point you're making, to the point where they said that they believe any political figure that even tries to reemerge in this situation will not be able to.
I agree.
They'll need a completely new slate of leadership.
I think our everything's going to be modified and calibrated with a capital C. It's going to be completely different.
What's your reaction when you hear what I heard earlier today, when people in these hotels and other areas that are being housed in different parts of the country are getting ready to spend months there, that the reality has hit them that because of the because of the way the pace of this war is going and because of the need of what the army needs to do in the southern part of Israel, the likelihood is that they're going to be in these hotels and being displaced for months. What do you think when you hear that?
It's a reality? No, it's a reality and prolonged pain. 20 minutes ago, before I walked into this room, I got a WhatsApp from a person saying, the mother was killed. My father has four kids. They're looking for a place. Could you help us find some place? And this is just, and for 6 months, that was a request. For 6 months, could you help us? Because we can't even imagine any rehabilitation or rebuilding happening before that. This is besides the ripple effect that it's going to happen. That's happening now and will continue happening in every aspect of Israel society, culturally, politically, religiously. This is going to take a while for us to stand, to return to where we were and to be better. It's going to take a lot of work.
And while that is going on,
we have a war.
I was just going to say, we also have a war to fight.
Bad enough if we just stopped here and there was a stick and there was a period here and now it's time to heal, rebuild, recalibrate. There's an unknown. We have a few hundred thousand soldiers right now. We're going to enter into Gaza and soon. 48 hours? 50-something hours? I was just talking to someone in the army a few minutes ago.
Well, you're someone who's usually in the know. Is this something that's inevitable in the next couple of days?
And then everyone's just going to hold their breath to see whether or not Hezbollah joins. That's the big test. You have a few hours after entering to Gaza to see what happens up north. And that's the game changer. And that's going to
dictate and define
the next few weeks for us here in Israel. My girls who are in university just called me up and said their school's been delayed even further. They push it off to now earliest December, probably January. So this whole semester has been canceled. So all university students just lost a semester. And I said, how do you feel? She was like, I don't care how I feel. Most of my classmates are on the front lines. One of my daughters who's in emergency medicine school said one of her classmates, a paramedic, was killed last week. So it's affecting. There's so many uncertainties. There's so many different emotions. I can't digest it. And I'm just keeping myself busy because I don't think I can digest the enormity of these conflicting emotions.
It's funny. When I first saw you today, I got that feeling that you were communicating to me that we're not going to discuss anything.
No.
We're going to go about doing what we said we're going to do today, and then you're going to come to my office later, and we're going to continue to just do what we said we were going to do today. Because you know I have a desire to really get into...
No, the moment I try to discuss my emotions or stop working, I'm just very broken.
You're very familiar with diaspora Jewry.
I try to.
You're a Jersey boy, after all.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very familiar with the state of Florida. I'm sure you've heard about the rabbinic mission from Boca that's been, you know, spoken about a lot.
Yeah, I was just talking to them.
Oh, you were just talking to them?
Yeah.
It's a lot of bags they brought, right?
A lot of bags. I think we have enough bags. Could someone send a message to the diaspora that we're going to open up a new business on duffel bags here?
I was just
post-war.
Say,
enough.
I'm standing.
Mamash, how many deodorants could an Israeli use? I mean, it's getting personal at this point that you think that we smell horrendously.
I am standing.
Every chayal has 30 sticks, deodorant sticks.
I am standing.
You're sending conditioner to chayalim on the northern front. When are they going to shower? And how much hair do you think they need to condition? Enough.
I am standing.
Thank you. Just come give us a hug and go back home. Enough with the conditioner and deodorants.
I am standing at baggage claim. Right?
Yes.
And I say to myself, wow, this is how you know it's wartime. There are no regular suitcases on the belt.
It's duffel bags.
It's really amazing.
That's going to be the symbol of this war.
I'm not kidding, by the way. I think you're right. So now...
you think I'm right about what? That we have enough deodorants, that we should stop sending duffel bags.
That should be the symbol of the war.
Okay. I thought you were joining.
So you're very familiar. Well, I don't know what to say about that.
It's all fine.
I don't know what to say about that. The suspicion is, and by the way, this has nothing to do with the, you know, hundreds of duffel bags that came in today, because I really don't know the reality. But there's so many people who are wondering where these things end up and whether the surplus of them end up, you know, in one place more than others, and if there is a lot, we just don't know.
I just want to thank everyone for my year supply of deodorant in my house. No, I know it's going to the right places.
So
I hope so.
So you're officially a soldier. If you have 100 things of deodorant in your house, you're officially a member of the IBF.
I'm done.
Obviously. I mean, this is now one of the determinations. Anyway, so you're very familiar with American jury. You know a lot about people in New Jersey, Florida, and many other places. And we're trying to convey this to, and this is why I thought, one of the reasons I thought it was so important to come here, because I think people in diaspora need to know, I don't want to paint it that people are down or that people are depressed, but there is a seriousness with which life is now being taken here, which you cannot appreciate if you're 6,000 miles away. You see it, as you said. You see it on the faces of people. You see it if you just interact with people. There's a seriousness. Many of them with tremendous hope. We spoke to people today from this yeshuv with tremendous hope, and they know that in the end...
we will win.
Right, what guarantees we have from the one above, I mean, that's obvious.
But we're pained, and we will sacrifice, and we know that. And that's very sobering, very concerning, very painful.
So is there a more practical way for American jury to be involved? If they're, I mean, all kidding aside, if we decide that the duffel bags, you know, need a break, are there other things you would recommend to people?
I think it's just more of an attitudinal shift of imo anochi betzara, that I'm feeling you. It's an emotive expression that I get what you're going through because I'm part of you, and it just changes the way you celebrate, changes the way that you communicate. And that should be felt. There's this rabbinic What's Up group of a few hundred American rabbis. I get to watch and be part of it. And there was a question that was posed, you know, when does Avinu Malkeinu become rote? And do we stop? And some of the Israeli rabbis are like, rote? There's nothing routine of what we're going through right now. And it took me a while just to, and I shared it with the people in my house. I showed the back and forth on that WhatsApp group. And just to even articulate that or to even ask that, when do we stop saying, shows a complete disconnect to what we're experiencing right now. When do we stop saying Avinu Malkeinu? When our boys are home. When our captives are home, when my nine nephews are out of Madim and put down their guns and they can come back to their wives. When do we stop Avinu Malkeinu? When we finish Shloshim and there's no more deaths in sight. When we don't have to, me filling out a paper for a gun license this morning, me, I never thought in my life that I would ever fill it out. I wrenched and called someone in the government. I said, I want you to fast track this for me. I'm sorry if I'm scaring anyone in my family who's listening to this. And they started to cry on the phone. I said, I never thought that you would be asking for that. This is where we're at. I said, I need to know that I can protect my family. This is the reality of a tsunami of emotions, and they're all conflicting. I'm so proud of the Jewish people. I'm inspired. I'm in awe of what's happening around the clock. I've never been this pained in my life. And I'm nauseous to know and to hear more stories of what happened in the kibbutzim. Literally nauseous. I can't eat. I don't sleep because I see, and I've seen pictures because I was exposed to certain things in certain meetings a couple of weeks ago. And I'm concerned of what happens next. And I'm sad that my kids have to go live through this. We lived through a sweet spot in history. We really did. And this is going to shape our kids' view of what Israel stands for, what the Jewish people stands for, what the diaspora stands for, geopolitical, racist, so much. It's going to go through this prism of what the next few weeks are going to be. And it's weeks. It's weeks. You'll be back. Unfortunately, you and I will speak again during this. I'm going to go in. This is going to take time. It's going to take time to do what we need to do. And God help us finish what we need to do. And I don't think the country is going to stand for anything less. We let our guard down. We believed in certain wokeness of political massaging. And we thought, we were just hopeful because we're people of peace. And we saw barbarism on a level that we never could possibly imagine. And things have to change. We can't live in our own country and not feel safe at night. Can't. And it's not just Israel, it's not just Israelis, it's not just me, it's you, it's everyone. If Israel cannot strengthen its existential stability, then there is no stability for any Jew around the world.
And we're beginning to feel that.
Yeah.
You don't have to be in Europe to feel it. You could be in the United States and certainly feel it. And by the way, I want to remind our listeners that as you're saying that your kids, for instance, in their formidable years are going to remember this, which as you said, is such a terrible shame. What you called the sweet spot of our history included
9/11.
Forget America for a second. Major intifadas.
Yeah.
That took hundreds and hundreds of lives. In fact, it did feel like a war. Those intifadas felt like one long war to a great degree. And if you remember the hit the tourism industry took, it was, you know, on many fronts, that war. It includes the 06 war. It includes the 2014 war. It includes the episodes of terrible tragedy but great unity. Kidnap Boys, Gilad Shalit, and the list, it's Sbarro, Park Hotel, and the list goes on and on and on. And even with all that together, what I just described, it comes to nothing as a total compared to what?
Because I think we reached a level of a declaration of dark versus light, of good versus evil, versus, I don't know.
Hope versus hopelessness?
I don't know. I think there's always been this hemshchiyut, this continued battle of our independence that percolates and has this episodic events throughout of intifadas, etc. But I think we reached this climactic moment of a defining moment.
Who are we?
Who are we? Who and what do we stand for? What do they stand for? And do we allow any element of that to be in our space? And it's a fight. It's a fight for humanity. And it's just shocking to see how people don't see it or people belittle it and how excited people were when they thought that Israel, by accident, shot a missile into a hospital. It's unbelievable. Just so that they can say, but if they felt so bad that they had to actually emote for Israeli death. So they had to find something to lessen that level of compassion. This is a defining moment for this chapter of history. And I think we have to be what we can do, if you're not here, I can do it. It's communicate that to the people, to feel it, to emote it, and to communicate it. People shouldn't question where we stand.
Will Israel be able to withstand the pressure that the world is going to, the world has already started to levy at them as, you know, things advance in this likely ground war? It's only going to get worse and worse.
I don't know. I hope it does. I think the military and the people are going to demand
no matter what the world
a new situation. And the political enterprise better align itself, because I don't think they have a future if they don't.
Are you getting the feeling they're aligning themselves now?
I think I've spoken to a bunch of friends within the government and those who are. And the people that I spoke to, the people that I spoke to were very honest. It's killing them, what's happening. And they're like, we're gone. I'm gone. I'm no longer, I'm not kidding myself. The moment that this is over, we're going home. we're going home, and
I'll stay till I'm needed for this purpose.
There's
this
no purpose. Future. There's this, and not because an ashamnu chatan, because he wasn't part of it. He's not doing a mea culpa. That this is a new person in the government. But they realize that the country needs to cleanse itself, restart, reboot.
Rabbi Josh Fass is with us. You've always encouraged people. I don't know if this is your exact quote, but you've always encouraged people to play a part in the future of the state of Israel, as opposed to sitting on the sidelines, or as opposed to treating this, as some people call it, Disneyland, as opposed to motherland.
Oh, that's nice.
You like that one?
I like that a lot.
Rabbi Riskin.
I'm going to borrow that.
Yes, I'm sure he won't mind. And look, I'm not being critical. I'm really not. People don't believe it, but I'm really not being critical of anybody who felt they need to go back to the United States, students, etc. Everyone's got to make their own decision. Everyone's got their own life to be concerned with. I get that. But you're still encouraging people, hey, there's a future of the Jewish people. It's in the state of Israel. This would be a good time, or any time would be a good time, to really hop aboard, so to speak. So what would you say to people today in that regard?
In what way?
Would you encourage people?
I encourage people. I don't. Listen, I've...
We've always talked about making Aliyah out of fear. If I made Aliyah today...
I don't want Aliyah fear.
I know, but I'm afraid.
Let me put it this way. I think there are times in a person's life, that allows them to calibrate their own compass to see who they are and where they want to be, and what's right. There are times that we do that in a family. Forget about Aliyah. Let's say family. There are certain times that we have something that happens in a family that we know where we need to be. Mm-hmm. We know it. It's in our DNA. We're coded that way. We know where we need to be, either for the other person or for myself. We do it in relationships. We do it in locations. We do it in how we show in our care and concern and compassion to other individuals. It's remarkable. Since October 7th, we've had close to 300 people who called and said, we want to make Aliyah now. We want to make Aliyah now. First of all, calm down. But besides that overzealousness, it's beautiful. But it just shows, and you ask them, and like, there's no, I need to be there. What am I waiting for? This is my home. Why should my home go through this without me? Why should I come only after the fact? It is, and that flight last week was only 25 people. You got so much press here, oddly so. And because it just gave people such chizuk.
It reminded me of the very first flight, right? The very first flight was the one that got all that press because it was the Vada, right?
And it was beautiful. And we were speaking to the people. I went early in the morning, myself and Minister Ofer Sofer, and we went together. And it was just, it was remarkable to talk to people. It was a great booster shot of hope. Usually I'm very happy. Just remind your listeners.
You're usually upbeat.
When I leave, just say, you know,
he's usually
Josh is usually
an upbeat fellow.
This is his evil twin, depressed twin, Joshua. but it was great. I'm so happy I went. I was debating whether or not to go, because I felt it was going to be such a contradictory emotion.
Have you been to weddings in the last 2 weeks?
I've been to weddings here at Nefesh.
In this building?
All the weddings that were supposed to happen were canceled. I just got another cancellation just now of another wedding we were supposed to go to. And tonight we have a wedding of a couple from Sderot, which is, can't wait.
Who were not originally scheduled to get married here?
No, most halls are closed. That whole industry is taking a huge hit. And all the repercussions and ripple effects of having a hall cancel, and caterers and waiters and bands and makeup artists. There's so many, that whole industry.
Is there
so
any industry that's not taking a big hit here?
Duffel bags.
That's about it, right?
Sorry. Eagles. I'm done.
And I guess those organizations that are able to continue to sustain themselves, but it's hard. I didn't realize until Mark told us that you have 14 employees that are in Miluim, which is a lot, large number.
And senior staff,
right,
which is affecting us tremendously because a lot of people are taking on wearing multiple hats, and it's hard. People are working around the clock, when around the clock means they hang up their phone 2 a.m. and they get back up at 6 a.m. People are working extremely, extremely hard. And it's not just continuing the facilitative Aliyah services that we're doing. We've taken on so many different projects, I'm sure. Mark raised a few of them with you, and they take a lot of manpower.
Plus, it's accompanied by all the stress that we're describing.
All the stress, and we have Chayilim, our own lone soldiers, that
That lone soldier hotline that you have for the parents is a wonderful service, and I get that most of the time it's, as Mark says, about gluten-free food. But now, I can't reach my son. Again, we understand why, because the Army won't allow it, but...
And they need
to know what's going on.
They need to know what's going on. And the Chayilim are calling in, and it's...
So what do you say to people about this balance of continuing life, but you have to at least acknowledge what's going on when you have, you know, happy get-togethers? And
so I share, we had a staff meeting. What day is it today?
Today's Tuesday.
Oh, so staff meeting yesterday. So... I said, even though we passed Parshat Noach, I said, I'll share with you what I share with my family and also to the Olim that arrived at the roof light. I said, you know, Noach's given all these different dimensions of how to build the Teva, how to build the Ark, and it says, Tzohar Taseh L'Teva, that you have to make a Tzohar. We don't know what Tzohar is. It's the first time we see it in Torah and Rashi, and we have two different schools of thought. Either it's a chalon, a window, or it's some kind of gem that illuminates and radiates light in the Teva. And each side rejects the other for multiple different reasons. So I said, maybe it's a perspective of how we're supposed to look at tragedy. And Noach's witnessing
the potential destruction of the world.
A destruction of destruction, of darkness. So do you have a chalon, do you have a window, and just stare into that abyss? Or do you try to walk away from that window and radiate some light? And I think all of us are just jostling between the two. I mean, I have in my office next to my, I have my laptop next to my main computer, and I'm listening to Channel 12, I think 15 hours a day.
Not healthy.
Oh, it's not, right? I don't recommend this to your listeners. But again, this is not the regular Josh Vass. There's a pull to that chalon. There's a pull, an anchoring just to be in it, to have that empathetic or empathy or that connection. But then you have to build, and you have to bring light, and you have to have life, and you have to.
So the chalon is light. I mean, it's supposed to be a source of light also, isn't it? If it's a chalon. I know what you're saying. That
yeah, but, you look the, but out, you're but, looking at it and you're seeing...
But maybe it's the rebirth death of the world.
Not at the end, maybe. But the first 40 days.
But the simple explanation the simple explanation of Tzohar is that it's a source of light.
Correct.
So the chalon has to be a source of light.
Nachon, but the question is... The question, nachon, you can say that the chalon itself had both elements to it. That had the light and also the darkness of the atmospheric darkness. I'm looking at it both, meaning that struggling between the two and feeling, I feel myself, and I think a lot of us feel pulled between the two. Like I had my parents over for Shabbat, and I have some of my kids can't handle what's happening. It's too painful for them. And when they're around, they're like, we can't talk, Abba, you can't mention the war. We can't. So I said to my parents, my father's also a news junkie like me, and I said, this is going to be an oasis. At Kiddush, we've started to do, since October 7th, we do tefillot for Chayalim, Emsuim, and the captive before Kiddush, and then right before Havdalah, we bookend that oasis. So I want the kids to know that we're thinking about them, and then After wiping the tear, we say, okay, we're going to make Kiddush now and have an oasis of try to have that light. And then as we exit, we say Tfilot and we make Havdalah and then we get back into the reality. And I think that that combination, that jostling of between the Tfilot and the Kiddush, the joy or that oasis of Kedusha and the pain is, I think, what everyone is feeling. Everyone's feeling. We have a staff member has not been here for 2 weeks. It just came in just to say hello and just broke down crying. And she said, I can't. I'm more productive at home. I just seeing everyone, I just can't do it. And they went back home. So we're all struggling. We all want to be productive. We want to bring light and we want to help and we want to create charities and we want to donate and we want to visit. We want to hug. But scratch that surface, and we're feeling pain.
Speaking to Rabbi Fass here at Nefesh B'Nefesh headquarters, by the way, how many rabbis around the world had two observations in the last few days? Number one, Vatim Aleha Aretz Hamas, and number two, that the antidote for the selfish and destructive manner that the world was acting in was to create this, to build this teva, this ark, where Noach and his family would have to spend day and night being concerned about the animals and filling their needs. Those two pieces were very, I know this for a fact, because I've gotten reports from multiple synagogues, that was a very big theme in the time of Parshas Noach that applied to these days. What do you think of that?
Explain the latter. Explain the second part.
Batimalei haaretz chamas.
I
get it. I get that you got it.
Oh, you're repeating. Okay, fine. I'm sorry.
Created an atmosphere where people did not treat each other properly, behaved selfishly, did dastardly deeds to others, and of course dropped into the depths of the worst sins that you would be chayav as an observer, as one who observes the Shev Mitzvot B'nei Noach. That's how bad it went. And the only antidote for this world that was in that state was for Noach to display and his family to display 24 hours a day of caring for these animals, of making sure they're fed, making sure they're taken care of. Only chesed, only reaching out and making sure that God's creations have what they need is the antidote for that type of behavior that almost destroyed the world.
Yeah. I mean, something... It's nothing new. We have to go to extremes.
We could call it the duffel bag vart.
Yes, it's the duffel bag. Yeah, we go to extremes of any emotion so that we can come back to that Shvila Zahav.
We could also call it the grilling vart because a lot of people are, although I honestly think that it's necessary, a lot of people are going and spending a lot of money to feed thousands of soldiers, but I honestly believe, I really do. I think it's one of the greatest causes.
I think it's beautiful. We're doing one next week in Mechle alone for 500 soldiers, but... I was just listening to Channel 12 the other day. They were interviewing with a general and they were like, you have no idea. Our soldiers are going to be the fattest sugar hide shampooed. No. Soldiers that they're not eating the rations, they're eating
Jewish mothers around the world said, yay!
It's a beautiful thing.
They're all very happy about it. What can I tell you? So let's see. Did we cover everything? You're still encouraging people to realize and to open up their eyes to the future of the Jewish peoples in the state of Israel, and they should play an active role in its moving forward, although it's going to be painful for the next few months, as you indicated. No question about that. Shouldn't discourage folks from, making those plans. If one does want to drop everything and move here, you would encourage calm. You'd encourage, a little bit of level-headedness,
A level-headedness.
Right.
That's a good word. Yeah. That's good. That's a good instruction.
Chill for a moment, you'd say. You say, chill for a moment, and then we'll get into the Aliyah discussion. But it's funny because we've seen this on a different level, obviously, because it's not Aliyah. But the number of people who dropped everything to join the army, the number of people, I'm not talking about those who were required to. I'm not talking about the kids in, one of the states in the United States who had no choice because the Israeli army demands that you get here as soon as possible. I'm talking about those who dropped everything and said, I'm going, and they'll utilize me as best as possible.
It's unbelievable.
Isn't it amazing?
It's unbelievable.
It's amazing.
Thinking about 3 months ago, during all, well, I'm going back, we're circling around, of all the questions whether or not Mila Wimnicks will show up or not. And now one of our staff members of the 14, he is a mafaked of, I think, 100 chaylim. So he was, we were talking like the first day, how many people do you think will come? He was like, I'll be happy if 75 show up. 120 people showed up. He was like, I don't even know who these 20 other people are. Who are they? They're part of my troops now. So it's just to have 120%.
And you saw the Haredi volunteer thing, right?
It's incredible.
Where they needed 200 people in 2000.
It's incredible. And you see how appreciated it is. And it's softening so many stances. It's just, it's gorgeous. In a way of what can be a new tomorrow if we do it right. If we do it right, we can have really a beautiful different chapter. There's a commercial that's running constantly in Channel 12.
Boy, are you plugging this Channel 12?
I hope you talk about
JM and AM as much as
no, that and duffel bags. I'm doing commercials for Walmart and no.
How do we get you aboard to be our board out there?
100%. I feel bad, but that's what happens when you watch 15 hours a day. There's a beautiful commercial that's just that Ein Yamin, Ein Smol, enough. Enough. We've learned that enough.
Learned it the hard way.
We've created such a segmented tribalism within this country. And if we can emerge, if we can emerge with a lessened degree of that, I mean, human beings are tribal, so right. It's going to be impossible to say that that's not going to happen. Right. But if we can have a softened edges, that'll be just beautiful, hopefully.
I have a curiosity.
Yes, sir.
And you are correct when you tell me I should stop harping on this issue. But I just can't.
So stop.
I can't prevent myself.
So stop.
I can't.
I'll stop mentioning Channel 12 and you stop harping.
I want everyone to parent the way I want to parent. I want people to... I need people to understand that this is a significant growth opportunity for young people around the world. To be here in Israel at this time. And I know I'm wrong in harping on this, but I'm curious. You have people in your family who are of teenage age who do see that there are American students who've decided to leave at this time. Do they have any resentment? Do you think that the group of Orthodox young people who are stepping up their game for the war effort, do you think they resent when their colleagues leave Israel at this time?
I don't think so. I think resentment is a strong word. I think there's an appreciation of fear, either by the parents who are so far away or from the students. I don't think there's any... A resentment has an undertone of being judgmental. I don't think they're judgmental. I don't think there's resentment. I think it's just, wow. Those parents are...
They felt the need, right?
They felt the need. And it's also... But that's the constant dynamic between 18-year-olds or 19-year-olds here in Israel versus 19-year-olds in America. They're going to the army, they're protecting, versus 18-year-olds, you know, Abba and Ima want us home, we're home, you know, no matter what. So there's a different... There's a cultural... That's just an expression or a symptom of a cultural delta. But no, they appreciate the depth of it. They understand it. I understand some people need to be in a safer zone, and if they don't have to, then okay, no one's judging it.
Yeah. An American Jewish father once reported to me that his son had just joined the Israeli army. So I wished him a mazel tov. And he was very, like, he could see, he looked like you did today, you know, like, you could see he's not accepting the mazel tov with any type of enthusiasm.
Thanks.
I've
become your barometer of a downer.
Hey, let's be fair.
It's fine.
Let's be fair.
You're allowing this, ego?
Let's be fair.
You're allowing this.
Watch Channel 12.
Let's be fair.
I'm Channel 14, guys.
Let's be fair. This audience knows that you and I have had quite a relationship for decades at this point.
Yes.
So let's be fair. When I sit here and say that, you know, these are difficult days for you. And I'm in a way jealous, frankly, because I don't feel the way you do, and I wish I would.
I have to tell you, parenthetically, a rabbi in America sent me flowers for Shabbos.
That's very nice.
With a note, because they've just been hearing all my interviews, and they think I'm about on the verge of crying. So, like, one of my kids was like, Abba, you got therapy flowers. You got some flowers.
But I like that
gesture. It was beautiful.
I like that
That's
gesture.
That's an Imo Anochi Betzara.
100%. I like that.
Did you say who it was on here?
Yes.
Rabbi Tuvia Brander.
That's beautiful.
Gorgeous.
That's a great young leader. That is a great young leader.
I would have sent deodorant.
Thanks.
That is really nice.
I was so moved by it.
That is really
nice. I was so moved. And someone else also just sent a note. I'm far away. I'm listening to you. I've heard a few things. Here's a hug. I'm giving you a virtual hug. And it means a lot. It means a person has that empathy, understands that these are challenging times. Challenging times of what we're dealing with. I mean, it's fine to talk about the programs and that, but just the individual cases that we're dealing with are just are hard.
So I see this father has a fast face, right?
No, we're back to that.
Fast face, that's a good one.
Good segue.
So I say to him, is everything all right? So he says, well, we sent him to the right schools, and we went to all the rallies, demonstrations, and parades. I wanted him to be a Zionist, but not this much of a Zionist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, welcome to my world. Every single time I walk in Teaneck, I get the same look.
Look what you've done to our family. You've done.
So you did something right, I did something wrong, but it's okay.
There's so many families that are on both sides of the world right now, right? There's so many. Teaneck, Long Island, L.A., Chicago, pick a city, especially the ones that are hubs of Aliyah. And I don't mean split, obviously, in an emotional way. They're split distance-wise. They're split geographically.
Correct. Going back to the students for a second.
Yeah.
If any parents are listening, when there's calm, send them back. Send them back not just for the institutions to have stability and that they can gain as much as they can from this year, but it's a good message. It's a good life message.
Well, calm would mean when the Gaza situation
is calm. Who knows what calm is or what the new calm is.
But at the minimum, calm would mean when the Gaza situation is calm.
I don't know. They came. They needed to be home. They needed to have that hug. They needed to have that pause. Don't message that when something is tough, we run. It's just not a good message.
And that's different.
It's okay to regroup. It's great to go to the corner in like a boxing ring and to I don't know boxing. And then get back
re-energize.
That's good. I don't drink something, get something sprayed like from one of those guinea pig, you know, bottles on your face. Whatever it is, but you got to get back. You got to get back. And you have to teach that to your kids so that they come back. Not for the Year in Israel experience, but for them to realize that things of value, you don't abandon. You come back. You might have to strengthen yourself. You have to look at your parents. I'm okay. We're good. These are new conditions. Go back.
So you and I agree on this. We just have different ways of manifesting it. In other words, you're let's put it this way, to be careful how I'm saying this. You're somewhat more sympathetic when someone feels the immediate need to protect their children.
100%.
Right.
I think you do what you need to do.
Right.
Everyone needs to do what they need to do. I'm not. People have emotional needs. People have fearful barometer. People have different things, personal issues that they have to care for. Right. And that's fine. Sometimes you have to regroup. Sometimes you have to leave. Sometimes you have to reboot, whatever it is. But just message. Okay, this is a long recess, but it's a recess. So that then they grow up realizing, okay, that then I needed to regroup. My parents needed to regroup. We went over safety issues. We things are a little calmer. I'm going back. But just the messaging of when things are challenging, you just pivot and move. It's that's what concerns me more. Not an Israel-centric concern, but more of a maturation concern.
I flew this morning and landed in Israel with some very prominent people.
And first of all, you look amazing for someone who just came off a plane. Just want to say.
Well, thank you, Rabbi Fass.
Duffel bag was open.
You're welcome.
As long as I'm schlepping stuff for NBN, I'm fine. Yeah, exactly. I look great.
It looks great.
You look wonderful. He doesn't look wonderful.
He always looks wonderful to me.
Looks wonderful.
Not sure where that came out of your
mouth. Know what's funny? I think the people around me were shocked.
That you looked wonderful?
No. I think the people around me were shocked. Because if I was asked by anybody else on planet Earth to take a duffel bag to Israel,
you would say,
not a chance.
No.
Including his siblings.
But when Rabbi Fass, like, everyone around me was like, you're not even objecting? You're not even upset? No.
Of course not.
Rabbi Fass needs this done, I'm doing it. Simple as that.
Because I was supposed to be in America like four times in the last 2 weeks.
Well, if you need me to bring more, let me know.
Now we're done.
Rabbi Fass. I land this morning
with
a lot of prominent people on the plane. One of them is somebody that Yigal and I know since we're, I don't know, 5 years old. He's a prominent physician, oncologist. He is in, I said, what are you doing here? We're at baggage claim. I had not seen him on the plane. We're at baggage claim. What are you doing here? He is here because his hospital in, I don't want to give out too many details to be fair to him, but whatever, I think this is all right to say. His hospital in New Jersey said to him, if you feel the need, and he's a very prominent physician, if you feel the need to go to Israel and do anything for any length of time, just go do it. We're 100% behind you. We'll support
Beautiful.
You. And he was here for Sukkot, went back, arranged everything with his patients, now is back here. So I'm giving out too many details. Anyway, so what's he doing? He'll be spending the next 3 weeks in Ichilov Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people. You know, it's a Jewish audience. Chances are we have some doctors and physicians
listening. One or two. Yeah.
There, possibly. They want to know. You know, the impression is that of all the industries that really need and the anticipation that there will be a need, it's this industry, right? It's medical help. I don't even know if you need full-time nurses. You could tell us what you've learned from your government friends.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about physicians and doctors, doctors who are desperate to get here, the same way the soldiers are desperate, or those who want to serve as soldiers have been desperate to get here?
Okay, excellent question. First of all, one should be, or especially Israeli citizens, rest assured that out of all the government agencies, probably the best one run right now is the Ministry of Health. They have a command center in Tel Aviv, which I went to last week for a debriefing. It is incredible. It is it's run well. It's executed well. Every branch, every hospital, every kupa, the army branches are represented. Every sector is divided by populations, by needs, to make sure that during wartime, people are getting the service that they have. And they need specific reinforcements.
Specialized areas.
Specialized areas. So instead of having, we have hundreds of physicians, we combined us and the Ministry of Health, there are around 5,500 physicians around the world that are willing to drop everything and get on a plane.
You have a list of them?
Yeah.
Thousands.
The Memshef, yeah. Thousands. So the system is, I say, let's do a charter flight next week. Let's bring, we already called El Al.
Well, I heard this idea. I thought it was dead.
So I thought, it's dead. But I said, let's get a charter flight. I'll put 300 physicians and then you spread. And they're like, that doesn't help our system. Doesn't help. We need to know day by day exactly what specialists that we need, either from the army or from the hospitals or from the forensic pathology department. We need to know what we need. And then we go into the list, we filter it out, we see their credentials, then we call the consulate, or we call Misrad HaKlita, or we call the Jewish agency, and we'll tell them, get them here, or see if they're willing to come.
Right.
They'll make the phone call, the physician says, I'm ready. The moment that the physician says, I'm ready, then they send them to us. And our desk here is now arranging all logistics for the physicians who are coming here. We helped already 20 physicians in the last week come. Working.
Oh, chances are the person who came today may have been
working throughout the country, right, in different hospitals and different clinics. And it's incredible. It's reinforcements for a host of reasons we need this.
So I sent you a physician recently. The chances of her service being utilized here, 50-50, like it depends on her specialty or needs, whatever. We have no idea.
No, I don't know.
It'll be down the road if someone feels that she'll be an added bonus to come to Israel.
The greater the specialty that they need for the right. required need has a higher probability.
Interesting.
And there are different elements. We have a lot of doctors in Muluim right now. We have the mass casualties, so right. It's a lot of...
So if someone's screaming, I'm willing to serve, and they're not calling me, you have to understand.
Nachum, I'm doing that all day long. I'm WhatsApping people. It's not that they don't...
It's not you. You.
It's not you. It's us.
Right.
It's
true.
No, 100%.
If we don't need you, we're not bringing you
anywhere. Exactly. Just know it's a beautiful thing that you volunteered, right. and that you're ready to do it when they're... And it also, you have to understand, you have to get a temporary medical license.
Right.
So bringing 300, 400 physicians here, the last thing that Ms. Radebriot needs to worry about right now is
more
how
paperwork?
Do we make... No, yeah, paperwork for 400 people that land that day.
Right.
That means they'll put them in a hotel. Which hotel?
Right.
Well, the hotels now have the Southerners, now Northerner refugees.
Right.
So what are you going to do? And Stefi Mendelovich, who's running the whole Hamas, said to me, Dr. Mendelovich, he said, well, I don't want to bring 300 people here and then have them frustrated that it's taking me 2 weeks, 3 weeks to get them their license and then place them into a hospital. Let's do this one by one, smart, strategic. And that's how they're running the entire infrastructure right now.
And we will not see that with any other industry. I mean, I'm just trying to think. Like, we're not going to see that with anything else. Doctors are the ones that, God forbid, are likely going to be needed here, but... There's no other group of people. We're not asking for engineers and tech people to...
No, not right now. It might be afterwards for the rebuilding.
Seriously.
For the rebuilding efforts. We have to rebuild communities. So, what will be needed then? And also industries. Who knows what will happen after this war of how lax... How do I say this nicely? workforce
right.
flexibility will be
right,
and that will change the dynamics of so many different industries. We have a cleaning crew here made up of Arabs, and the firm that says we cannot, you're a high target. We can't go to sleep at night knowing that we're going to bring them to. So they and that's a horrible feeling. We have a relationship with them. But if you have the company themselves, the mother company says that we can't go to sleep at night knowing that we don't can't assure your safety 100%, that's sad. I mean, it's a new reality. But then that's also a new workforce. So all those openings, all the workforces, all the biggest cry right now is our agricultural scene.
No workers.
There are no workers. So we have tons of teenagers and college students, because they don't have college and university, are now picking avocados and picking tomatoes and picking pomegranates. And that's what's happening every day. Tons of industries. Well, you look around, we're giving out flowers to everyone because an industry just had to pack up all their stuff in because it's dying. No workers. So we just sent over a van and bought flowers for the whole staff.
I was sad to see your neighbors next door with, you know, they're...
No, it's the whole cinema.
Nobody's around.
All the shops. One or two restaurants are open, barely.
And one or two customers.
Yeah. So...
So that, I just wanted to...
Sure.
Would you... There are people who are asking, like, I mean, to me, it's a big thing that Nachum and Ralph came, even for 2 days. But, I was having a discussion with someone yesterday. Are we encouraging visitors now? Because there are no hotel rooms. For sure in Yerushalayim, it's very difficult to get a hotel room now. And there are a lot of restaurants that are closed because of lack of staff, etc. What normally a visitor would do here, like if you encourage people to come to spend money, and stuff, a lot of that stuff is not happening now. So the question is, do we encourage people to come to visit now? Like for me... To have my brother here is a big chizuk to me, right? So is it something we encourage or not?
I don't think if it's for industry rehabilitation, I don't think it helps.
Right.
And it just frustrates.
But
probably frustrates even more.
But chizuk missions.
But chizuk, I think, is very important.
Especially if they know that they're volunteering
and doing
things.
If there's a purpose, if there's a toilet to it, then for sure. I mean, right. One of the projects we're going to do is Operation Hug. Is that we're going to give free tickets to parents of lone soldiers from around the world.
When does that start?
Next week. Just come. Some parents are having a really difficult time being far away. They just want to be in the same country.
That's an NBN initiative?
It's an NBN.
Not a government of Israel.
No. Oh, come on. That's adorable.
Wishful thinking, Nahum.
No, that...
You know, airline tickets are expensive.
Oh, trust me. But I also don't know where they're going to stay.
Right.
So, and I'm not going to take care of the hospital. I'll just take care of flights, sleep by a cousin. But that's not an industry.
Right. That's a specific purpose. Right. Yeah.
So if there's a purpose and you're trying to heal, you're trying to show concern.
The tourism industry in general has a lot of people that are not necessarily of the Jewish faith. Let's put it that way for this conversation. Yeah. When that industry does come back, I mean, we're talking about obviously, you know, far down the road, or what seems right now far down the road. When it does come back, those positions are going to have to be filled the same way you spoke about the agriculture positions that are needing to be filled now.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a transformative work. I mean, I don't know how you put it before. You said flexible workforce. It's going to be a transformative workforce.
It'll be interesting.
A completely new scene here.
Or we don't know. Or there'll be an allegiance shift. And that will be remarkable. A full different geopolitical alignment. The people who are standing for something, for light and life and hope and goodness.
Joining with the people here who believe in the same principles and values.
Exactly.
Boy, wouldn't that be the fulfillment of certain prophecies?
Yeah.
We get to that point. Well, we've been speaking for an hour.
That's it?
Does it seem longer?
Let's recap.
With me, I know it does
seem
longer.
You said duffel bag around 12 times, deodorant 27, channel 12 like 149 times.
Except for the duffel bag, the other two you're responsible for. I don't think I said a word about deodorant, but...
That was ego. He has a fixation on the deodorant.
I had no fixation. It's that or channel 12. I don't know.
It's a drinking game every time.
Do you remember back in 2006, we were told, in all seriousness.
No, I don't remember anything since last, like 4 days ago.
No, but seriously, back in 06, we were told seriously that soldiers did not have basic necessities and essentials. I'm not talking about toiletries. I'm talking about, you know, underwear and socks. First of all, so was that true then when we were doing all that collecting and distributing? And no, is that still the case today?
It depends where they are. It depends which troops.
So there's certain troops who have everything they need and certain troops who are desperate for
correct, stuff. Correct. There is a need. We mobilize so many soldiers within hours.
Yeah.
No one anticipated. You don't have...
So even the bases weren't prepared.
Correct.
For those numbers.
No. And people ran. So people didn't prepare. It wasn't normal Miluim. It wasn't normal. You had hundreds of thousands of people. I remember we have, on our block, we have 18 houses, 18 homes. And 15 of them had sons who went on Shabbos to the army. So just the scene on Simchas Torah were just cars up and down, jumping, wearing Shabbos clothes, grabbing whatever they can, throwing stuff in, just running to the bases, running. So just that was so, you know, spontaneous, reactive. So then you get to the bases. They didn't bring anything with them. They've been there for 17 days. Wow. And you had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. So They're being mobilized, and then you have this troop has this, and I'm jealous of that, and this person has that, and why don't I have that? And then that creates a frenzy for products. And then we start barbecuing.
And if they get better meat than the other guy. Mm. You walk into shul on a typical morning. It's obvious that there are plenty of people missing, right?
Oh, it's...
It's obvious.
Yeah.
I think that's everywhere. I don't think it's in specific places.
No, I know it's everywhere, but shuls that have 12 people normally.
No, but you see, our young adults are gone.
Yeah. That whole segment.
The whole segment. And if you're in a community, it's hundreds or dozens. It's your whole population that is.
Well, so we saw it in a hotel today.
Yep.
If you looked around the lobby,
oh my gosh,
mothers and children.
Hundreds of kids.
And very, very few young adult males.
Correct.
If any.
Right. The youngest of the adult males were probably 40 years old, right, or 35 years old.
So you see, so that's missing. And then you see the faces of the parents. The parents are visibly carrying their concern very, very openly. So it's just a very different, the atmospherics are completely different. You're missing a population that are out fighting. And they were, you know, they're Amud HaTzibur, Amud HaMinyan, there you have all your guys. And the parents are walking concern, justifiably.
Being on Har Herzl with you today was a jarring experience for many reasons. One of them was when I pointed out to you that it's obvious that the two graves next to each other were two brothers, 22 and 21 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You must have people in your neighborhood who have multiple kids in the Army. It's yes. Got to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's... We can't, as American parents, we can't even imagine it. Literally not being able to sleep at night.
Literally?
I mean, literally, like, you know, sitting on your couch and just wondering what's going on.
Yeah, it's that's why it's such a dramatic separation or...
Difference. It's a dramatic difference. Right, incongruity, right. That's what it is. We'll never be able to relate to it. I mean, we're trying. It's one of the reasons we're here.
I can't relate to it. I don't have a son in the Army right now. And I feel not guilty. I feel off. Mm-hmm. Mariv at night, I'm standing with fathers who every single one of their kids is in the Army. Everyone, it's a small minion. And I feel like I have hundreds of sons because of all the Chayilim Bodedim. I'm dealing with calls all day long. But I just don't, what gives me the right to put my head down on a pillow when I know that everyone else is sleeping differently or not sleeping? So it's another emotion to throw into the mix.
And then while we're at it, we should also mention as much as every segment, and this has to be acknowledged, every segment of the Jewish community is doing their part. And it's obvious, we keep emphasizing it, and kol hakavod to everybody. But that segment of our community that has so many single mothers, and I don't mean, God forbid, that their husbands are never coming home, but they are now raising their kids alone. Their husbands are in the Army. And those kids who are, you know, without their father and who are wishing that he'd walk in that door any moment. And again, we are praying and are confident that he will, but you get the point. That whole segment of Israeli society is operating in a completely different realm. And that's why when Mark said earlier that there are people who literally try to help these moms by just filling in and just, you know, doing tasks for them that yeah. are helpful, that might be the most chesed one can do.
I agree.
In this case.
They're strong women.
It's unbelievable. It really is. And the kids. I mean, we know that kids have a fortitude that we'll never understand as adults.
Or not, but for it to fall all on one person, to single parent with a concern and with everything going on and running to the mamad with your kids, don't think it's not just the logistics and school and homeschooling because kids are not back yet fully. It's the worry, it's concern, and also the reactive needs because of the war. It's a lot. And the uncertainty. You don't know when this is over, when they're coming home.
Yeah. And on top of that, they saw their protectors go through a terrible breach of security, and they know it could happen anywhere. To the point where somebody who never thought he'd ever carry a gun is now trying to expedite that system.
I'm not going to get one. I'm going to be there.
Oh, you mean in the end, when push comes to shove?
No, I will, like, I think. But
You will?
I'll be disqualified, I think. Which is looking at the medical...
they won't allow you.
My God.
They won't allow you to have one.
Do you have this? Yes. Do you have this? Yes. Do you take this? 100%. Did you ever? Yes. Stop asking. Do you know of a friend who has? Yes.
Do you watch Channel 12?
100%. Yes. 15 hours.
Well, then, I guess you've been disqualified.
Not yet. I still have protexia.
They're well, afraid you're going to shoot the screen.
Exactly. Oh, that might actually be the problem. That may be the issue. Rabbi Fass, I thank you.
I thank you for coming. I think it's... I just told Tony. Tony called beforehand. Tony Gelber, my co-partner. And I said, Nachum came. He was so moved by your speech that he jumped out of plane. He was like, and I left!
Well, on Friday, when I said to Malcolm that if he's here Tuesday, join us at the NBN studio, he said, "Nope, if you're coming, I got to go. We cannot.
Oh yeah,
United States can't be without both of us. Beautiful. One maybe, but not both of us, of course. There's a lot going on in the diaspora that needs to be taken care of.
But you being here and the experiences that you're having today and tomorrow, I think are very, very impactful. Not just for the people who are receiving your instinctive compassion, which is for you, it comes naturally, but be able to share the complexities.
Yeah.
And that's it's subtleties, it's complexities, it's the incongruities, the different emotions. If you're able to communicate that to people back at home, then they'll understand the depth of what's happening and how this is different from intifadas, how this is different from past conflicts. And this is an existential fight.
And the reason I keep harping on it is because they were so serious. Those were such serious encounters, such serious times. And it's nothing compared to this.
Yeah.
If you would have asked us three weeks ago, what's the most serious thing to happen in Israel over the last 20 years? We would have had a whole list of things to choose from, you know. But now the existential threat on top of the breach of security, on top of the fear that certain people have at this point, put it all together, it's a very challenging time. I thank you, Rabbi Fass, and it would only be appropriate if I remind people who are looking to move to Israel, nbn.org.il, nbn.org.il, and if you're a physician,
register.
Meaning, just
get on the website, register.
Go to the site and register, simple as that. All right.
Especially if you're a specialist. That came out funny.
If you've got a specialty. Especially if you're a specialist with a specialty.
Right, you like that? This has been fun, very uplifting.
Is that bad that it was fun?
No. Not at all.
An hour ago, you didn't have this disposition. It's a little different.
You gave me a smile.
You've transformed, Rabbi. Right? You've transformed a bit.
Thank you.
He's going to the airport now. His mission is...
So I had I had therapeutic flowers, and now I had a therapeutic interview.
But in all seriousness, this was the first smile we saw from Rabbi Fass.
Oh, stop it.
Rabbi Fass.
What?
You would argue with me that this
I
is not...
I smiled when I saw you this morning,
That's true.
And then we haven't smiled since. There
was an initial smile, but then you were very reserved. Hey, it's wartime.
We're also in a cemetery.
And it was in a cemetery, right?
Bonus shalom.
Well, you smiled on
and
the street.
I still can't get over that experience, I'll tell you. Because that cemetery is multiplied by how many around this country? The sacrifice that has been made over these decades.
Okay, we're circling back to darkness.
But that's a very good point to end on.
Sacrifice.
It's been built on a
values.
Lot. It's been built on a lot of that.
Yes.
It's built on a lot of that. The soldiers of 21 and 22-year-olds. Literally. We saw Miriam Peretz's son buried right near where we were. I mentioned the Gedalia family before, which is, you know, obviously for a lot of people who know them, very jarring. And Zachary Baumel.
Yeah, right there.
How many times
did we
daven for, mention, speak to his parents on the air?
Yeah.
Dr. Dietrich was so involved with the Syrian government or Saudi Arabian government, whoever it was, in trying to get any information. This Arafat, that Haleria, what he did to the family and holding up information.
Sickness.
And there he is in his final resting place.
Yeah.
Right there with all the other heroes. Rabbi Fass, I thank you. I do have a trip scheduled for December. Who knows? Maybe I'll see you before that.
That would be lovely.
Maybe during that trip. You never know. If you do need a duffel bag taken, I will. This time I will pass.
Oh, man.
I'll pass.
Okay.
I have an obligation to my brother. Are you kidding me? Do you know any Folgers coffees I got to bring for my brother?
Also, your nieces are texting now, so who knows?
Thank you for coming.
What do you say about
what?
That?
Say
what
about
you,
what?
What do you say about a family in Jerusalem who puts in a request every time for Folgers coffee? What do you think of that?
It's a beautiful thing.
Is it?
Sure.
And me being able to fulfill that request.
It's a beautiful thing. You're shliach mitzvah.
And that's it. It's an actual mitzvah.
100%.
To give them the coffee they want.
To have simcha in Eretz Yisrael.
Wow.
I may have asked him Shana.
Do you know that I'm going
there's
to...
some malach up there you, saying, you go, Nachum.
Do you know that now I'm going to approach that task very differently?
100%. You should say hidden imuchan mazuman before you buy it.
Don't forget the conditioner.
Oh, you need that as well?
Obviously.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm just a red rat.
No, I'm sorry. That was 10
minutes.
It's fine. No, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Very important that you're here. And it's even more important that you're going to communicate the message to everyone and be that that tether between Israel and diaspora. And you'll have ups and downs. These 48 hours, I think, encapsulates what we're all feeling. Going to the hotel and seeing the people who had to be uprooted. Going to Har Herzl and seeing the ultimate sacrifice. Tonight on the rooftop at a chuppah of a couple from Sderot, getting married, showing the optimism and hope.
And you know
in
what's
going to
happen. They'll sing Atikva at the chuppah.
Oh, don't look at me. I'm going to be crying in the corner. I'm a crier.
Chassan Kahal will be wrapped in Israeli flags.
Oh, it's going to... Don't script it for them.
No,
the
but you know,
spontaneous.
I'm saying it's going to be
it's going to be very, very beautiful. Yeah. Very beautiful.
Oh, I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying
this is
the way people feel right now. The videos, which I'm sure you've seen, of the makeshift weddings.
It's gorgeous.
They bring the challah.
I love it.
And she's stunned that this is now her wedding day. This is now her wedding day with all the chayalim.
It's great.
Whole thing is unbelievable. Achenu b'Yisrael and Achim Achem, our brothers and sisters in Israel, we are with you. It's your favorite America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NachumSiegel.com, on the Nachum Siegel Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app.